Let's Talk with Teresa and Ron.
Yeah.
We have Teresa Pesci here and Ron Ragone, and let's get the nitty-gritty out. Retirement is Murder will be in the Panada Little Theater, and I'll run down the different times. Tomorrow night, Friday, October 20th at 7 p.m. Saturday, there's going to be a doubleheader at 2 p.m. and at 7 p.m. The 21st. And then they'll catch their breath and hop back into the Little Theater on October 27th, a Friday, at 7 p.m. and October 28th, a Saturday, at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30, and there's going to be music as folks enter. So, Teresa.
Yes, sir.
You're on. Tell us about whatever you'd like to about Retirement is Murder, the play, and then we can spin off from there.
Well, Retirement as Murder is going to be preceded, and everybody's going to get in the retirement mood by my wonderful friend Kelly Woodruff. She is a very small person with the biggest voice I've ever heard. She's absolutely amazing. She manages to be fresh and young and sultry all at the same time. And she has three fantastic musicians who've all gotten together with her. And they are going to hold court and sing and entertain in the lobby for a half hour from 6:30 till the show opens, so everybody can have a glass of wine if they're so inclined, and they can get in the mood and come in all amped up for the opening of the show.
And what kind of music will folks hear as they enter?
When she said golden oldies, ooh, I just go back to the beginning of my life, which is long enough ago, thank you very much. But she goes further than that, and she's going to be doing everything from Cole Porter to Linda Ronstadt. I have not seen her playlist, but I've heard this woman sing many times, and it is worth pulling up a chair or standing there and listening. She's fabulous.
So you encourage playgoers to come at 6:30, enjoy wine, a beer,
yes,
or whatever, and
yes, have a concert. It's
entertainment
wonderful
beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So that's at 6:30,
yes,
and on Sunday that would be at 1:30.
Correct.
No, not Sunday. Saturday.
Saturday matinee.
So many different days in a week. I don't get them all correct. Okay, let's talk about the play.
Well, Retirement is Murder. I was thinking back to when I first wrote it, and it was when I first began to experience my body actually, truly getting a little older. Because when we age, that from 20 to 30, there's nothing. 30 to 40 to 50, you begin to feel it in your early 50s. Your 60s, oh my Lord. And by your 70s, your body wants to say bye-bye, and mm-hmm, you're holding on to it with both hands. So as I experienced more things, the first scene came to me, and the first scene is of someone deciding to go into this beautiful retirement home. And everything that takes place in there is a comedic reflection of what it's like to age and how some people cope with it. But the whole energy of the play is a secret that is buried within this retirement home. And I'm not going to tell anybody what it is. And they discover this secret. And in coming out and dealing with it, they bring up all of their past skills and they come to life. So it's funny and it's fast and it's scary and it's true. It's a good play.
The title is Retirement is Murder. Is it fair to say that murder has something to do with this secret buried in the retirement home?
Why, of course not. What are you
okay
referring to?
Mm-hmm.
There's a deeper secret than that I won't reveal, but yes, there has.
Okay.
Murder most foul has happened, and they stumble upon it.
Okay. Do you have a detective-type character who's running
the
show?
We do not have a specific Hercule Poirot. No, it's everyone working together to discover what is going on and how to handle it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fun.
And what does Mr. Ragone play?
He plays the plant that we put at the side of the play. No, Ron, tell them. Tell them about you.
Well, I get to play the part of an elderly man, a curmudgeon, if you will. And when, of course, that was a bit of typecasting, talking to fine friends and family, they'd said, well, that role should be pretty easy for you.
Typecasting?
Yes, typecasting, yes. And it's the part of an individual who comes to life. He's gone to this retirement home and maybe escaping things, past tragedies, past what's behind him. And he has a great line when asked why he is there, and he says, actually, it's none of anyone's business why I am here. And he's described as holding his cards very close to his chest, and then when the need is upon them, he rises to the occasion.
There's a lot of romance, because don't kid yourselves, no matter how old you get, your heart still beats faster when you look at certain people. I can testify to that. It's happened to me many times in my life. So this is a combination of action and terror and suspense and romance. It's a good blend.
Uh-huh. Ron, are you part of that romance?
In a way, yes. There are there's a couple of very lovely scenes that are available that people will be watching. And mine is there, but it takes a third place to the other romances that are going on.
Mm-hmm. Teresa.
Yes.
Ron's not the only person in the play. Do you want to do a rundown of the different local thespians?
Oh, ooh. How much time do you have? It's a privilege to work with one of the best casts I've ever worked with. These people have been in theater. They've worked with me through the last couple of decades, and I bribed them all shamelessly and got them together. We have, of course, Ron Ragone. I remember the first time I saw him on a stage. I had never seen such presence in my life, and I literally ran across the width of the Panada Theater to grab his wife. I think I scared her a little. And I said, I need his contact information immediately. And I get to work with Ron. And then there's Bob Simon, who is a wonderful playwright and actor. And he is commuting an hour and a half to get to these rehearsals. He's a dedicated actor, and he's absolutely marvelous. It's and takes direction like a dream. It's wonderful. Linda Ryan, I have worked with many times. She is a fabulous actress with a very warm, wonderful ambiance to her. You just like her. Even if she's sitting on the stage doing nothing, you can't not like Linda Ryan. She's great, a very soothing presence. It's my pleasure, my great pleasure, to introduce a newcomer to the stage, Shelley Johnson. She plays a role I never once had to say, stay in character. From the first time she got on the stage to the end of the play, she stayed in character. She plays a most endearing role. She has the fewest lines and steals the whole darn play. Sorry, everybody else. It just happens sometimes. Then there's Sarah Caruso. She is marvelous. She was my leading lady when we did Mousetrap. She can do anything, okay. And she does it all in this. Tremendous energy. Terry Pardini, she's... good Lord, I don't know what this play would be without that woman. She plays a New Yorker so fabulously you'd actually think she was one. And it was fabulous to work with her. Fritz Moore has been in some of my local productions, and he is, I don't know what chemical he is, but he's something that the Greeks would have a name for, an alchemy to him. He can turn into anybody before your very eyes in 3 seconds flat. Mm-hmm. And in this, here he is, a guy deep into yoga, rides his bike everywhere. You'll never know it. It takes him 10 minutes to get out of a chair. He walks with a cane. He puts Ron's curmudgeon to shame sometimes. He's so darn cranky. He's fantastic, and actually, he's a young man. We're down to two more. Betty McQuirk. She has played the lead in several of my plays. She can scare the heck out of you. She can wring your heart with a drama that just pulls it by the gut. She can make you hysterically laugh and turn into Lucille Ball. The woman is so flexible. She's made out of silly putty. It's fabulous to work with her. And then one of my daughters who is not, but I wish she were, and that's Ashley Schalbrecht. She's been with me from the very, very beginning. And she agreed to play a small part in this, even though she's now in demand by all of the local theaters because she's shown what she can do. So Ashley and I got together for this, and Ashley Schalbrecht named this play. When I was wondering what to do, she said, oh, well, you know, Retirement is Murder. And I said, yes, that's the name of the play. So cool. That's our cast. They are absolutely fabulous. And I love every darn one of them.
And how do you, this will be in the Little Theater.
Yes, sir.
How do you, what are the dimensions of the stage?
2x4.
Postage stamp. how do you fit, or what are the, let me re-ask this. What are the challenges navigating so many, what, 9?
Yes. When they're on the stage, actually, it's not as big a problem as you would think because I know how to place people. You place some that are sitting, some that are the medium level, like on the side of the sofa, and some standing. And you always vary the seating like that. The biggest challenge is in the Little Theater, which has fantastic ambiance, and I love putting on plays there. There is no backstage. You have to create your own backstage with flats and things like that. Then getting on and off the stage, although you can do it from several different areas, if you have a large cast, it is like a small line of ants all going along. And so you try to find a way to hide them before. And we are taking them in this play. Several of the entrances occur from the back, off of the deck in the back, so that they don't have to march past the audience and break the fourth wall in a way you'd rather that they didn't. But once they're on stage, and there are a few, there are just a few moments in this when the cast has to all go behind the flat and get far better acquainted than they would prefer to be, perhaps. They're all crammed back there waiting to get out, but they're very patient about it. So it's a challenge. But I have done plays with 12 people in the cast in the Little Theater. It can be done.
It can be done. And yes, sir. Is there an intermission?
Yes, there is. I'm thinking in about 15, 20 minutes, possibly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So they're two relatively short acts. They're not really too long, and a very important intermission because the intermission occurs right at a time. The play is kind of biphasic. The first act, you get introduced to the character. There's a lot of comedy in there, and I refer to it as the talk stage, and then the second act is the do stage. We get serious. Our skills come to life, and we rise to the occasion, as I had said earlier. So it's a two-act play, and for the old folks that are out there that are coming to the 7 o'clock showing, or hopefully they'll get there at 6:30 and hear this wonderful music, is that they'll be home in bed by 9 o'clock.
Ron, I'd like to ask you, as an actor, as somebody who spends time up on the stage, what is it like being in a venue like the Little Theater as opposed to the main stage in the Panada Theater, where almost in the Little Theater you can reach out and touch the person in the back row?
Intimacy.
Okay.
Intimacy. And there are certain plays that lend themselves to that sort of thing, and this play is just one of them. I've been on the big stage. The big stage, you certainly have to project.
And
there has to be good diction because you're playing not only to that person in the first row, but you're playing to the guy sitting way in the back. And they both have to walk away from that program being able to say, I understood every word and I heard every word. It's still a challenge in the Little Theater, too. Acoustically, it's not what the big theater is. So that's always a concern. But it's incumbent upon the actors to make sure that everybody goes home with a smile on their face saying that was money well spent. They will with this particular production.
I would imagine being an audience member, there's certain spotlight on me rather than making a gesture that might take a performer out of character. Is that a concern when you're in such a small, enclosed space? I'm not going to say somebody's going to pull out a cell phone,
Well, that's happened to me before. It's happened to me before.
Do you break character?
Oh, I wanted to so badly. A couple of times when it was a young woman, she had her cell phone. She wasn't too far away, and the cell phone went off once, and I wanted to go so badly, will you please turn that thing off? But you can't, you know, because there's that fourth wall. And by referring to somebody on the... you know, sitting in the audience, you're breaking that wall, and this is something you don't do.
Teresa, so when did you start, what's the timeline of this whole production? When did you start sitting down to write this play?
I wrote it several years ago, actually, and then there were some major life changes in employment and my personal life. And I said, you know, we are planning on doing a production called Sherlock in April. And I said, you know, let's do this first. This has been sleeping. I'm going to wake it up. And so it's been great fun to bring it out and bring it to pass. Usually, it's a good question that you asked, because usually when I write something, I put it on right away. I've never had anything put on pause like this. But that's what happened. A whole lot of things happened. So now we're doing this, and I'm sort of getting back into gear again, getting back into theater again, and the pace of it. And believe me, at the age that I am now, that pace is far different for me to experience. At the end of a rehearsal, everything went out into the rehearsal, and I sit there in a quiet blob, and people ask me questions, and I sit there and go, I know nothing. I have to go and have coffee to revive. But the experience of doing this now is really interesting after that long respite, and it held its form. It's ageless. Anybody could do this play anytime, anywhere in the world, and be understood.
So it rested for a few years, and then anything in particular make you say, I guess doing Sherlock is what it was that made you say, now I'm going to do
this. Yes. I said, let's do this. This would be really fun to do now and get back in the pace of this.
Yeah.
And I wanted to work with a lot of actors that I had missed.
Uh-huh.
You miss it. It's a world, and you miss it when you're away from it. You miss all those people.
Yeah. When did you start casting for the play?
I cast plays in my mind as I write them, but that is not pre-casting. What I do is I often write to a voice. Kate McAllister has been in many of my productions that she ended up not being in because of her life, but I wrote it to her voice. And so a lot of times I'll write to a person's voice. And then I do like to have auditions always, because you open the doors, people come in that get a chance that never had a chance before. So I earnestly try to avoid pre-casting. It's always a temptation. They're your friends. They'd be great. You love them, but you have to. It's community theater. It's not I don't have a repertory theater. So I open them up, and that's how I found Fritz, and that's how I found Kelly and Joe Woodruff. And that's how I do it. I just open it up. But how I write it is often to a person's voice.
Yeah. How's it? Has it changed at all? I mean, you're the writer and the director. Does it change as once you have the cast in place, you start rehearsing? Do you go back and say, actually, that scene needs something different? Or?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. It's a very fluid process. When you get people who are really gifted, I listen. In fact, sometimes I err on the side of listening too much, and people sometimes get the idea that I don't know what I want. Oh, yes, I do know what I want. But the thing is, when the actors get up there and start to embody characters, they came up with things I wouldn't have thought of. They came up, how about if we do this? So it's a very collaborative thing. And if I had the ego to say it, which I do not, it would be like how Scorsese works with De Niro and Pacino. Yes, he's the director, but they work together. I think if you don't loosen up your actors and let them have input, you are missing on a great deal. Yes, they'll do what you say, but let them do what they think and always be open to me. Let's do it this way. Okay. And then sometimes we rehearse it one day, and one day I see it and I say, okay, you need to stand up here. You need to make this gesture here, and you need to raise your hand higher and make a fist when you raise it into the air. It comes to me and I say it and they do it. So it is as it comes to life and as it breathes, yes, it changes. It's fun. It's fun. It's a living thing. After a play's been done a million times, it's My Fair Lady. Okay, the lead always does Rex Harrison's role. Yeah. It gets stamped, but it is not stamped until it's done several times, and this is just premiering.
Yeah. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY, by the way. We're talking to Teresa Pesci, the writer and director of Retirement is Murder, and Ron Ragone, who plays
Cranky. He's Cranky.
Yeah,
I'm Cranky.
What's the character's name?
My character is Theodore Dracos.
Oh,
yes.
That's scary.
He's of Greek ancestry, and Vince. Is another member of the cast, and he's also part of the repertoire. He's another resident and he and Vince kind of have a love-hate relationship. They're really, honestly, good friends, but there's a lot of competition that goes, particularly when it comes to the women in the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the actor Bob Simone. And you can go ahead and say what you all... Oh, no, you can't.
No, I can't. This is, we're on radio.
You can if you change the first word to a more acceptable one.
The word would be, darn Italians.
And yes.
That comes... That was difficult for me to say at first, being Italian. But, you know, I'm playing the Greek. It's called acting. So if it says you have to be a Greek, I'm a Greek. Mm-hmm.
So where does one get tickets?
One gets them online at panada.org. That's the only place they are available in advance. And, of course, at the door. They are already selling rather well. So I would encourage people to go ahead online at panada.org and get their tickets, which are $17, very reasonable. And they can also get them at the door.
How many people will be seated in the little theater?
It has a maximum seating of 65.
Okay, so in other words, get your tickets.
Yes.
Do not wait to the door.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
So where are we now? I mean, the play goes on tomorrow night.
Yeah.
What's your concerns, Teresa?
Well, after the rehearsal we had last night, I have no concerns. They all lit up like Christmas trees. The energy was fantastic. And I thought, wow, all of a sudden it's just there, complete. It's a wonderful moment. And I knew this cast would enjoy that moment very much, and they did. So we are going to be having our dress rehearsal, of course, now.
Today?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And because it's a shorter play, we get to have a dress rehearsal twice. We run through it. A local actor and a friend of mine, Michael Bigley, stepped in at the last minute to do lights and sounds. He has at least one crown in heaven waiting for him for doing that. And he's doing a wonderful job of that as well. And so dress rehearsal tonight, and it's going to be so much fun. And then we get to have opening night.
And how much depends upon, you know, you talk about the sparkling quality of the cast and doing a rehearsal, whatever. How much depends upon the audience? If they laugh at the right place or if they don't, if a line that cracks the players up but falls flat, does that, how do you respond to that, Ron?
Well, audiences have personalities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know why it is, but it seems in my history, it seems like Friday night audiences, no matter where you are, seem to be more alive.
Friday night audiences,
yeah,
interesting.
And Saturday nights, and the thing is, the people on Saturday night are enjoying the production just as well as the Friday night people, but they don't reflect it as much. But that's okay, because the actors say, these people paid money to come and see me.
Mm-hmm,
they're going to get the same show. And as a matter of fact, sometimes it's as an actor, you say, I've got to win them. I've got to make them really like what we're doing. And you tend to have more energy.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Whatever the personality of the audience is, they're going to get a good show.
Okay.
Whether they laugh their heads off or whether they're rather subdued, we'll play to them. And like I said, we'll make them go home saying that was money well spent.
Now, this sounds like there's a paper in there someplace, why Friday night audiences are more energetic in responses, because I saw Teresa nodding her head. Yeah. The people listening did not. Can you move closer to the microphone, Teresa, so they can see you nodding your head? thank you. That sort of came, what, the end of a work week, they haven't had a chance to decompress, whereas Saturdays you've... relaxed, or I don't know.
I'm just making that up.
I just made that up, Teresa.
Well, good on you, because you know you get out of work and it's Friday.
Time to
and you go out and you've got that. Whereas Saturday, you've had a long day and you're going to go to see a play, so you're a little quieter. As for the actors, seasoned actors don't need to be told. New actors do how to hold for laughter. Mm-hmm. There's a certain point, if you come in too soon on the laughter, you're training them not to laugh because they miss lines.
That's
so you wait until after it crests. And then you speak your line over what remains of the... There is an art to it. These guys didn't need to be told that. They've all worked
They're
comedy
pros.
Many times.
They're
they
pros.
Are. They are. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We're here with Teresa Pesci and Ron Ragone at 88.5 KRFY, and we're talking about Retirement is Murder, and we're going to be coming back after a short music break on this date, October 19th, in 1967. Put on your Motown moves. We're going to listen to a song that was released on this date by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. I Second That Emotion.
Yes.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles with I Second That Emotion. It ends quickly there.
It ends quickly. You know, that's one Motown song that I'd like to have go on like another 5 minutes. Because
yeah.
you're just getting your grooves down. And then whammo, 2 minutes and 48 seconds are not enough to get into the flow. But that was released on this date in 1967. Wow.
Did you hear it right away there in 67?
Oh, absolutely. I was in northern Indiana at the time, so that's just spitting distance from Detroit. We're here with Teresa Pesci and Ron Ragone, and we're talking about Retirement is Murder that opens tomorrow night in the Little Theater at the Panada, October 20th at 7 o'clock. Come at 6:30 to be entertained with music and have a glass of wine. A beer or whatever. And then on Saturday, the 21st, two performances at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock. And again, music, come a half hour early. And then catch your breath. And then the following weekend, the 27th, a Friday, and the 28th, a Saturday, both at 7 o'clock. Teresa.
And remember, you get your tickets online at panada.org, and they are $17.
Excellent. And while the music was playing, Ron had an observation when we were talking about, Teresa mentioned before the music break, of just it all coming together and flowing. And Ron, what did you, was your observation?
Well, this is so reminiscent of every play that I've been in. Had you come 2 weeks before the production and watched what was going on stage, and you would just shake your head and say, how are you going to get this together? And but we do. And it reminded me of one of my favorite movies. Let's see, what was it called? Shakespeare in Love. And Jeffrey Rush plays a theater owner. This we're talking 17th century England at the time. But the same thing was going on stage, and a newcomer to the theater was watching it, and he was just shaking his head, saying, this is never going to get together. If you recall, they were doing Romeo and Juliet. And Jeffrey responds, he says, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it does. It always does. It's magic. and left that as the final reason as to why everything comes across. But it was. And the show was no exception to that.
And so not only the director knows that, but also the actors themselves realize that what you're doing at this point in time is...
Well, I would say some of the newbies in the theater, like we have one, she might be thinking, oh my goodness, how are we going to do this?
And, this is a mess. This is a mess.
Yes, but it will. It will.
It does fall into place. I'd like to ask Teresa to take a step back and talk about the performing arts in Sandpoint in North Idaho from another perspective, fitting your play into what's the performing arts milieu here in town.
So there are some out there listening to this who will remember the Unicorn Theater and all of the wonderful people who were in it, like Karen Bowers and Dave Gunter, and the list will go on and on and on and on. And it ran for a very long time, and then there was a rest. And about that time, I came to town, and theater started up again with several different people. And what we have most recently We have I'm Back and Doing Things. We also have Unknown Locals, haven't put on a play in a while, but that's Chris and Madeline Heron. Chris is a playwright. He's a genius. They do wonderful plays. Dorothy Prophet has come back to doing plays. She never left, but she's back in that again, doing wonderful work. And, of course, Keely Gray of the LPO Repertory Company, they're putting on fabulous things. And this is happening right when, of course, we have an infusion of people from out of town, a lot more people. They come from sometimes perhaps more sophisticated cities. I don't know. So there is something, a great stirring at this time of the arts in this community. And it's not just the theater, it's the dance and it's the music. And I would like to see the day when people make it a point to come from Spokane and Coeur d'Alene to Sandpoint for great events rather than the other way around. And I was part of that before with my own company, Sandpoint on Stage. And I am just so honored, so blessed, so graced to be in this community that says, of course you can put on a play at this absolutely gorgeous historic theater. Come right in. Really? At other places, you try to fit into their schedule and they have the whole thing filled out 2 years in advance and you write your own play. Bye-bye. You know, Panada gives people a chance. So I'm so pleased to be part of this. That's why I'm excited about Sherlock, which is my, what do you call the opus grande something of your career?
Magnus opus.
That's it. Sherlock is that to me. So I'm very excited about that, that I can do that here. And I'm very excited about all the other people who are coming up, because now I'm seeing new actors. And from new actors, that's where you got a lot of new directors and producers. They come out of that. So I will be up there plucking on my favorite harp while a lot of this actually comes to fruition, but it's a great genesis of theater here, and everybody who wants to be involved with it can be. If nothing else, financially contribute. We've got talent coming out our ears in this community. We really do, and opportunities.
Just made me think of in the little theater with nine folks moving on, where are you going to be?
I'm trying to stay out of this, believe it or not. Here I am on the radio. I even asked that my name not be associated with it. I just wanted to give this play a chance and stay in the background a little bit. But people want to give you credit, and so they do. Where I am, I usually sit in the back, and I watch everything because I love watching it. That's it. It's like telling me, don't hold the baby. I have to be there every time it's on. I never say, oh, I've seen it so many times, I think I'll stay home. Heck no, if it ran for a year, I'd be there for every performance. I love it. It's my life. I love it.
And Ron, you've been up on the stage seeing Teresa in the audience. Does that does that make a difference? Or, I mean, are you looking for a response in her face or a thumbs up? Or
No. Again, that would be breaking the fourth wall. We can't do that. I'm sure Teresa's back there taking notes, as she should. It's her job. And if there's a correction, if for instance, somebody couldn't be understood, it's incumbent upon Teresa to tell us so that we don't make that same mistake again. Will performances go off flawlessly? I don't think so. They never do. But if we stay in character, no one is going to know a goof-up. No one.
The best part for me is I'm their favorite laugh track, because I swear, yeah, I wrote it. And I'm laughing at my writing because of the way that they're doing it. So that's important to have people who laugh easily in an audience. Mm-hmm. Some people are enjoying a play immensely, but they're just not big laughers. Mm-hmm. So you always hope that you get some people out there who laugh easily, because I do. And I prompt that just by enjoying their performance so much. They still make me laugh every darn thing they do that's funny.
Jack, are you an easy laugher? I'm not.
I don't think so.
A comedian, and I'm enjoying the heck out of the comedian. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes the person I'm with will say, are you enjoying this? And I am, but I just don't guffaw. Uh-huh. You know?
I think it takes me a minute to get started. But if I can, once I get into it. Maybe I'm not an easy laugher, but I think I'm a big laugher once it gets going.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask Teresa and Ron. Okay, you're one weekend, then another weekend, and in the time in between, what do you guys do?
There's what's called a pickup rehearsal. You give everybody a break. and you let them rest. And then before Friday night, you do a pickup rehearsal. Because if there's any little hiccup because your brain has, you know, dropped this or that, that's what you need to get back and get your confidence. But they do need to rest at a certain point.
Sure.
And that's when I let them rest, is during that time. Everybody, I need that mm-hmm. by that time. Then your energy level builds up, but you've had a few days, so you need to go through it like a dry run. So that's what you do. You do a pickup rehearsal and then your next performance.
Excellent, excellent. We're here with Ron Rigoni and Teresa Pesci. Teresa is the playwright and director. Ron is the cranky old man. Sorry, Ron.
That's okay.
Let's one more time, the nitty-gritty. Who, what, where, and why, and how much?
Well, it's you want the dates? Everything. All right. It's opening night is this Friday, the 20th. Come early for the 6:30 concert, that word is pronounced, with Kelly Woodruff, who is amazing, and a three-piece band accompanying her at 6:30. Play starts at 7, and we promise that you'll be nighty nights by 9. But you'll have laughed a lot before then. Then, of course, Saturday, the 21st, is when we have our matinee at 2 o'clock with the pre-show concert at 1:30, and our evening performance at 7 with the pre-show concert at 6:30. Then you get to run and frolic and do other things, but please come back and see it twice. You'll want to. It's so fantastic. The next week is the Friday, the 27th at 7 p.m., and closing night, Saturday the 28th at 7 p.m. You get your tickets, which are $17, only at panada.org and at the door.
Okay, we ran down the list of actors. Behind the stage people, the set decoration, costumes, who do we, are any names there that you want to mention?
Yes, there are two. My very good friends have helped me out with this. Joe and Kelly Woodruff. Yes, Kelly is the one who'll be singing. Kelly has turned out to be a goldmine of creativity. I had no idea. She gets the most fabulous props. She has researched Sherlock to within the last hair on his head. She set pieces. The woman is amazing. She's put together this fantastic set and wonderful props, and she's doing the same for the other play. She is the one coordinating the costumes and what they wear. I really do rely on her. She's wonderful. And Michael Bigley, local actor that everybody has seen in a million different things, he offered to come in and do the lights and sound, and he took command of the rehearsal, which at this point is like herding cats because everybody's very excited. And I'm saying, will you listen to me? And they don't. He says, and everybody snaps to attention. So we had a great tech rehearsal, thanks to Michael Bigley. So that's who's behind the scenes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Want to thank you both for very much. Is there anything we haven't looked at that you want to draw attention to?
No, I think you covered everything pretty well.
I think everybody over the age of 60 is going to be nodding their head and laughing hysterically. That's what I think.
And in bed by 9 o'clock. So
yes.
You can come in your pajamas. How's that? And then not miss a beat.
What about those under the age of 60? Do you have
that was something limit? I was going to address. Mm-hmm. While the characters are all over 60, while the main theme is that with age doesn't mean that you should be retired. Maybe you should take your skills and your knowledge and your wisdom that you've gained your entire lifetime and put it to good use. So here is an opportunity that these people on stage have. Their characters say, we've got a problem. Let's pull from our experience and our wisdom and solve the problem. And they rise to the occasion. Now, is that only going to appeal to old people? No. Because the way this play is written, thanks to Teresa here, good laughs are good laughs. Funny lines are funny lines. Good characters on stage done well is entertaining. Mm-hmm. And that could be, you could be 20, you can be 16. I'm having a granddaughter come up. I don't know how old she is. What is she, 18? And I'm expecting her to enjoy this just as well as the 72-year-old sitting next to her.
The humor factor is I said PG-13. I thought, you know what? If somebody brought their 10-year-old child in here, some of that, but it's light to me. It's not mm-hmm. offensive at all. There's nothing vulgar about this play whatsoever. It's just cute. But some of it is, you know, slightly. That's why he's always saying damn Italians, you know,
because
of a little rivalry for one of the, I said the word.
You said the word.
I said the, yes, it's that was, on me. That Fire was, me, shoot me, never have me for an interview again. Sorry. Oh, Jim, you told me and I transgressed. I'm sorry.
Hey, that's all right.
This is live radio. Just don't repeat that line again.
I won't.
You guys have a great time. It's tomorrow night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and a week Friday and a week Saturday night. And you can get more information and tickets online at panada.org. Good to have you guys.
Thanks for having me. Should I say
break multiple legs?
Yes.
Okay, multiple legs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to play on this date. October 19th in 1979, Prince released his second album, and we're going to do a cut off it. It was titled Prince. The first one was For Only You or something like that, For You. This is Prince's, and I Want to Be Your Lover.